The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We have a jam-packed show because it is finally week one of the NFL season. Peter King is going to be with us. Football morning in America. Peter King on all things around the Cardinals. They open the season against the Chiefs this coming Sunday. We'll have John Wilner with us. Wilner Hotline after what the U of A did at San Diego State. And looking ahead to their matchup on Saturday night against Mississippi State and Mike Leach. Also, Herm Edwards' team opening with a win and going to Oklahoma State this week will bounce around the Pac-12 with John Wilner. Also, the new discussion of the CFP being broadened out. That happened last Friday. I want to get John's thoughts on that, what it could mean for the Pac-12. I think it's actually good news. We'll get to John Wilner. And then Fabs is with us. Michael Fabiano, back for another year of fantasy football dirt. It's what he does on SiriusXM. You can read his content on SI.com. Fabs, a contributor to us, the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano. So Peter King, John Wilner, Michael Fabiano, great show ahead. Our opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their ongoing support. It is week one of the season for the Cardinals. Don't know about Zach Ertz, ankle injury. Don't know about Marcus Golden, toe injury slash contract concern. Not sure about what the Chiefs are going to look like. I think this is a good time, actually, to be catching Kansas City. Tyreek is gone. Mahomes is still Mahomes. Different players. Still there's Travis Kelce. But this is not the complete Kansas City Chiefs team. And when you don't play games in August, you don't get into games, the timing and all that stuff, I'm not expecting a pretty game aesthetically. I'm not. The Cardinals are not going to have DeAndre Hopkins. Does that mean everything's going to look right to them? I'm expecting a lot of James Conner. On the defensive side of the football, it is time for Isaiah Simmons. It is time for Zaven Collins. It is time for those two to step up and play like first-round picks consistently. There's flashes, and there's like, oh, they're great. Do it through a whole season, okay? Long year ahead, not going to get too high, not going to get too low. You know, they could lose Sunday against the Chiefs. I think they're playing Kansas City at a good time, but they can get blown out too, and I'm not going to sit here and have overreaction on Monday one way or another. I'm just not. So looking forward to that. On the college football scene, what I love about doing this is it's high school on Friday, college Saturday, NFL on Sunday. I'm working in reverse order this week. The college end, like Saturday for me, I've got Alabama, Texas, that starts at 9 a.m. So I'm going to see Bijan Robinson, former South Point star, Texas running back, great kid, National Football Foundation, Valley of the Sun chapter, nominee, awardee, winner, just a great kid. And he's going to be on the field at 9 a.m. I think I got to take a break in the middle of the day because at 4:30, I have Arizona State at Oklahoma State. And then at 8 p.m., like the latest game in Division I football, will be Arizona hosting Mississippi State in Tucson. The latest game. And I need to see that, especially as well as U of A played in the opener. We'll talk with John Wilner about that. I think over on the baseball side of things, it's becoming interesting to me. The Diamondbacks are 8 games out of the wild card. I know the easy thing to say is, Brad, they have no shot. I only want to talk about football. No, because the baseball team's actually interesting now. They're only 4 games below 500. You may be saying that means they're not good. Guys, this has been the worst. This is like when you could see the Suns finally coming out of the abyss. Remember those days of 14 wins and 18 wins? Remember those days? Yeah, they weren't that long ago. And now what do we have? Well, I'm not going to say that this is a team that's going to go win the National League next year, but certainly I can look now and say, you know what? In 2023, they're going to be a team that competes for the postseason. You can even make that case now. A week from now, if they gain 3 or 4 games in the next 10 days, which is doable. Their schedule, they've got, whether they have 6 against the Giants still, they have 6 against the Padres or 5 against the Padres. They got 4 with the Dodgers. They've got 3 with the Rockies. Okay, so they've got teams behind them, teams in front of them, but the way that they've handled their business here as of late, they've won 9 of their last 11. Like, I had them pegged for 75 wins. I think I'm going to be wrong. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be wrong. I think they're going to be right around 80 wins the way it's going for them, unless the wheels fall off, and I can't see that happening. It's not just Zach Gallen. Like Saturday, I forgot to mention, Saturday, Zach Gallen is supposed to pitch. I have to watch that now that he's gone 41 and a third innings without allowing a run. I have to watch that at some point on Saturday, the Zach Gallen show. Well, last night, I'm watching Ryan Nelson. Ryan Nelson? Start of the year, Ryan Nelson's going to help them out. Ryan Nelson came in and retired 17 straight last night. Seven innings pitched. The Padre fans were booing. He had a moment where he had Profar on second, Soto at the plate, and he gets Soto out, and it was a very easy spot for Torey Lovello to say, you know what, I'm going to go to the bullpen and bail you out. And he kept him in. And he is someone that, just watching him last night, I was impressed. I hung with the game. Tonight, it's Merrill Kelly on the mound. I will watch. I'm fine with Merrill Kelly. Saturday for sure. But they're doing things, and there's questions around the team that are good questions to have. You know, I've got a couple things I wrote down about it. Here's Jake McCarthy hitting .321 in the second half of the season. They have four outfielders that they've got to make a decision on at some point, I would think. Or do they keep four next season? Dalton Varsho's the first full-time catcher. He's a part-time catcher. But first catcher for the Diamondbacks in the history of the franchise hit 20 home runs. Plays other positions, but he's hit 20 home runs. I got to take that. You would have thought maybe Damian Miller or maybe Kelly Stinnett or, you know, go right down the line of guys, Miguel Montero. And no, it's Dalton Varsho. So they're a fun team to watch. They're a team that makes it interesting. And I'm just looking forward to watching them play tonight. There's something cool about baseball games in September as part of the sports landscape that we haven't had here in a long time. Are we there yet? They're eight games back. Get a couple things going, and all of a sudden, you're sitting there at 4 or 5, and it's not out of the realm of possibility. Long shot, for sure. But hey, dreaming's free, right? What else around town? High school end, I went out last Friday night, watched my son get on the field in warm-ups, which is great, the journey that he has been on. Being a dad, I'm taking it all in. It's a senior of high school. This is the youngest of our four. So I'm taking Friday nights a little more serious this year. Like I actually volunteered to help out with senior night. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if they're going to say, you're the tallest dude there, go hang banners. I don't know. But I know I want to be there for him, and we're having fun with that. All right, Peter King on the other side, then John Wilner and Michael Fabiano. On a Tuesday, I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, as always, it's good to catch up with Peter King. It's been a tumultuous offseason here in the Valley. I think it's time to bring Peter on board to get into this because as our hometown heroes are getting ready to host a Super Bowl and they are saying, you know, it's been 2 years in a row, we're hometown team, so let's just see if this happens in February. I just have to start from the beginning and say, of course, you can read Peter's content over on Football Morning America at NBC Sports. But from the beginning here, what do you make out of this offseason? I'm just happy to see the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes come rolling in here. Really, Peter?
Well, I mean, what was so interesting about this offseason is that it almost never ended. You know, and the classic example is the Trey Lance story that, excuse me, that you think, okay, Jimmy Garoppolo in February has his tearful goodbye press conference, or late January, whenever it was. And they hand the team to Trey Lance. And to me, I had him as one of my 20 most compelling figures of this season. And then just when you think, okay, they're going to live with the ups and downs of Trey Lance, they signed Jimmy Garoppolo. So all of a sudden, the story is precisely what it was a year ago, only Trey Lance starts opening day. I don't think Trey Lance will start 17 games, but we'll see. But that is the kind of offseason it was. It's almost like stories didn't get finished. And, you know, we just don't know yet. I mean, you mentioned Kansas City. The day I was there, they had four new receivers that Patrick Mahomes, it was midway through training camp. And Patrick Mahomes, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, Brad, but there's this device called a Whoop. Okay. It measures, you know, everything about you know, heart rate, you know, fitness, everything. A lot of, I don't know, a lot of people wear them. I got one for Christmas last year. I've sort of been hooked on it. But Mahomes wears it. And he showed me one of his daily results from training camp. And, like, I mean, not to say he was a wreck, but he didn't do that well physically. And the reason is he was up till 11:15. He never stays up this late, but he is trying to get four new receivers all on the same page so that when they come to the Valley in a week and a half or whenever it is, they're going to look like the Kansas City Chiefs and not a team that's struggling to prepare for a season. So there's just a lot of uncertainty, I think, right now around the league.
The Cardinals, if you look at their coming into the season, Peter, does it concern you the DeAndre Hopkins suspension for PED, the death of Jeff Gladney, Kyler Murray's deal back and forth with the organization becoming so public, Hollywood Brown, 120 at 7 a.m. in the morning on a freeway on a weekday morning during rush hour. Yeah. It was just one thing after the next. So just looking deep at the Cardinals from your view, what do you expect this year out of them?
You know, one of the most surprising things of this offseason, and I know I'm guilty of recency bias, but getting Trayvon Mullen from the Raiders. In the previous regime, they loved Trayvon Mullen. And for whatever reason, Dave Ziegler, the GM with the Raiders, Josh McDaniels, they just weren't high on Trayvon Mullen Jr. And so I happen to think that could be a sneaky good pickup for them. And, you know, not to jump on poor Mike Mayock, but oh my God. Yeah. I mean, how bad do Mike Mayock's three drafts look when you cut Alex Leatherwood one day and you take another, you take a second round pick from their first draft who Mayock thought was going to be a top, like a Pro Bowl caliber corner in the NFL. And now they're both gone along with all the other guys, Henry Ruggs, Damon Arnett, so many guys. Cleveland Furl has been a massive disappointment. Anyway, be that as it may, look, one team's refuse is another team's treasure. So we'll see. But I kind of like that for the Cardinals. Now, as far as their whole offseason goes, it's all up to it's all going to be up to Kyler Murray. And, you know, the Cliff Kingsbury, Kyler Murray, Michael Bidwill, Steve Keim, they got to put the genie back in the bottle, Brad. Yeah. They just do. They, you know, think about it. You know, what happened this offseason can't be undone with everybody just being nice and pleasant and everybody singing Kumbaya. We'll see how this goes. But somebody wanted that clause in that contract. And you know that when that clause goes in a contract, you can't be so naive to think that no one's going to find out about it. And if people find out about it, what is going to happen? The predictable storm is going to happen, and it happened. So, you know, look, all I can say is this guy is going to have to be the PhD of the pocket, you know, this year, Kyler Murray, or else everybody's going to be wondering about everything pertaining to his work ethic. And we'll see how that comes to be.
Yeah, the fan base out here, to say they're skeptical, I'd be understating it, because it's just going to be one-off week. And it's going to be, see, he's playing too many games. He's not doing it. He's not studying enough. He's got to be studying. This clause was in the contract for a reason. And the fan base out here, I've not seen a story cause that big of a bleep storm, Peter, in a long, long time out here.
How long did it last, Brad?
I think, Peter, it's still going. There's still people here that don't believe that they want to say, prove it. Okay? Prove it on the field. Prove it every Sunday. Not one Sunday, not two Sundays. And let's see what happens in December because this team has failed in December the last 2 years. They have nosedived. And so no matter what happens here in September, October, November, if they nosedive again, Peter, I don't know how this fan base is going to react to Kyler. This is shaping up where you can say, okay, Cliff, you're extended. Steve, you're extended. There's a big portion of the fan base that doesn't want Steve here as general manager. I'm just really surprised that that did come out public. And I don't think you can just say, well, you know, Kyler's in a great place now and it's the start of the season. Like,
you can't.
No.
But I will just make this one point.
Sure.
And this is worth remembering. And I think everybody in Arizona who says blow it up, or if they start slow, blow it up. I just want to make this one point. On draft day, or draft weekend 2019, I was in Tempe on Saturday afternoon after the draft ended. I sat with Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim, and they explained how basically how the Kyler Murray thing came about. So it was really educational about, you know, the fact that I do believe it when I did believe it when Cliff Kingsbury said, I really did study Josh Rosen. But, you know, there was no question in anybody's mind. If you hire Cliff Kingsbury and they have the first pick in the draft, he's going to tell Steve Keim, this is the guy I want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't make the pick, but this is the guy I want, and here's why. And it's worth remembering, it just is, that if you look back at the team that Kingsbury and Kyler Murray inherited, a 3-win team.
Yep.
They go from 3 to 5, 3 wins to 5 wins to 8 wins, and then to 11 wins in the playoffs. And again, you know, you can say whatever you want. You're disillusioned with some things about Kyler Murray. But the fact is, you drafted him, and 2.5 years after you drafted him, you won 11 games and made the playoffs. You know, everything else, not everything, but all this other stuff that people are talking about, and probably rightfully so, it's a long off season. Just remember that what Kyler Murray was drafted to do, lead the Cardinals to the playoffs, he did. And you can throw away all the other stuff and just understand. And I understand there's a lot of people who don't value number of wins for a franchise in a quarterback's resume. I do.
Mm-hmm.
I have been made fun of for years because I do think that quarterback wins should be a statistic, because quarterbacks represent everything in a franchise. If you don't have one, you're not winning 11 games, period. And everybody can say, well, geez, what about Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers? They haven't had a great quarterback. Listen, you know, we're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo is pretty good. He's not a top 8 or 10 quarterback. I get it, but he's a good starting NFL quarterback. Anyway, I didn't mean to go off on a rant, but no. My whole point about this is I think people need to understand one thing. Kyler Murray was drafted to do something. He did it. Now, what are you going to do? You know, it's not over. It's not even close to over. It's just beginning. So there's a lot of pressure on Kyler Murray, and rightfully so.
And I do think on the other side of the coin is there's some very good leaders out here. Buda Baker's a great leader. Zach Ertz, great leader. There's some very good pieces that have been brought in here that you can make the case that James Conner can go out and have a big season for them. And Chase Edmonds going to Miami is not going to be that big of a deal. You can make that case. But I think the feeling out here is, what are they going to do in September or December rather? And the way it ended against the Rams was just an awful, putrid performance. So let's just wait and see. So
yeah, you know, I'll make one point now. One of the things I'm going to write Monday in my column is, you know, I'm going to write about five players in the league who I think can have ridiculously good years. Okay. One of them is James Conner. And one of the points I'm going to make is Chase Edmonds is gone.
Yep.
The only opponent that James Conner has right now is his own health. And, you know, because he has gotten hurt a bunch of times. And so if he stays healthy, I'll never forget first year in training camp in 2019, when I was in Arizona, one of the things that Cliff Kingsbury said, we sat on the back of a golf cart after practice. And one of the, or maybe it was before practice, but one of the things he said to me was, we're going to have a great running game. He didn't say we're going to have a good running game. We're going to have a great running game. And that year, they had arguably the best running game in the NFL when no one expected that. But he will, the two running backs, if I played fantasy football, which I don't, that I do everything to try to get. Jonathan Taylor, who I think, no question, should be the first pick in every fantasy draft. I've seen a bunch of people say Christian McCaffrey. I mean, how do you take a guy who's been hurt 2 years? I don't get that. You know, Jonathan Taylor, you know, has a history of being a workhorse. He's still only, whatever, 23, 24 years old. You know, he ran for 1,800 yards last year. And Frank Reich, I can tell you this. I had lunch with him in Indy in camp. He's not lessening the load on Jonathan Taylor. But be that all that as it may, you know, I still think James Conner, if he plays 17 games, I shouldn't think. If he plays 17 games, absolute minimum, I think he'll gain 1,300 yards and score a bunch of touchdowns.
And it was big that Rodney Hudson came back for him too. And that was not just for James, but that there was the question at the start of camp. A couple of things I'll let you go. Peter King with us, Football Morning in America, NBC Sports. Make sure you follow him and all of his content on social. Don Coryell, when I was a kid in San Diego, just breaking into the business, I got to cover him. It was fun. I hosted shows. Ernie Zampezi was part of that. He passed this past couple days ago. The impact of Don Coryell and Ernie Zampezi on the game of football, Peter, I know this could be a long segment. Can you put it into words in a few minutes, few moments?
Well, I'm one of the 12 Hall of Fame voters who's on the coach slash contributor subcommittee voting one person into the finalist role for the Hall of Fame vote in January of 2023. Mm. There were a lot of really good candidates this year, I thought. Robert Kraft and Buddy Parker. Nobody knows who Buddy Parker is, and I just feel for Buddy Parker's family. The guy is just getting robbed by not getting in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. I don't think anybody wants to hear the Buddy Parker diatribe. But Don Coryell, you know, Jim Trotter makes a very good point. He's one of the Hall of Fame voters. He has always advanced his cause. But he's always made this good point that Don Coryell went from being a finalist in Hall of Fame voting and getting very close to basically being forgotten. Why? I mean, all he did was die. He didn't, his resume didn't get erased or smudged or, you know, less significant. You know, he's one of the greatest contributors to offensive football in the 103-year history of pro football. And I think what really sold me on him is when John Madden, at the memorial service for Don Coryell, stood up and he looked into the crowd. He was sitting before he went up to speak with Dan Fouts and Joe Gibbs. And he looks out at the crowd and he goes, look, we know, Dan, Joe, me, we know that there's no way we would have gold jackets, no way we would be in Canton if it weren't for the influence of Don Coryell. And I think that says an awful lot. And I think the other thing that says an awful lot is the people who are coaching today who view that their base of knowledge in the passing game is Coryell related. And then obviously Ernie Zampezi as well. But I was very happy to see him get in. But there's a bunch of guys who I think would have been good choices, but very happy for Don Coryell.
Yeah, no, it's well put. And Dan has said to me on the air, he's like, I would have probably quit the game if it weren't for Don Coryell. You know, he's gone that far.
Dan is a voter now, Brad, and he a Hall of Fame voter. I like that the Hall have put in the Hall has put in some very thoughtful former players and coaches. Like, if you sat in there and listened to James Lofton, Tony Dungy, Dan Fouts,
wow,
you would say the danger of putting people like that in, you know, on the committee is that, you know, you got Tony Dungy, oh, I'm going to have too many Colts, too many Bucks, and James Lofton, oh boy, the Packers and the Raiders or whatever. You get what I mean, that yeah, they'll be hometown guys. But I got to tell you, they have not been. And as somebody, I've been on that committee for 30 years. And as somebody, I was worried about that. And my worry has been sort of taken away. I robbed your last question. What's the last topic? I didn't mean to go off on that.
No. It's fine. It was about Coryell and Zamp. And, you know, the Super Bowl is out here. So I'm going to ask the proverbial, what's Peter's agenda come February? Where do you have to be? Are you going to be here before then? When you're in the Super Bowl for a week in Scottsdale and Tempe, where do you need to hit? What do you need to eat? Where do you want to climb? I'm going to be a host.
I'm not crazy where they usually put us up, you know, when the Super Bowl has been out there. Last time I was out there, it was an NBC game. And so we were at that hotel. I forget the name of it, but it's out. It's out near the Arizona Biltmore, and it's right on Camelback. And I forget the name of it, but I was working at a Starbucks on like maybe Thursday morning of that week early. And who walks into the Starbucks? Because he was in the hotel. A bunch of the LA Clippers guys who were in town to play the Suns that week. So I'd kind of rather be a little bit out of town. I wish the media hotel was the Biltmore. I'd kill for it. But I'm a fan of that neighborhood and taking very slow runs right around the Biltmore is always a lot of fun. Yeah. But I don't know, Brad, I love the Super Bowl being there. I truly do, because it's beautiful. The stadium is perfect for holding a Super Bowl. I think it'll be a great week. So hopefully the Cardinals will make it at least partially down that trail in January and give people something to hope for.
I appreciate your time and your insights as always. Look forward to catching up with you if possible during the season, Peter. Thanks.
Okay, Brad, thanks a lot.
There's Peter King with us, and we're back with more after this time out. All right, as promised, it is time for Wilner Hotline. John Wilner, all things around the Pac-12 in college football. Every week, John joins us. You can find his content on the website. And also, of course, follow him over on Twitter at WilnerHotline.com and social media platforms. All right, I'll just throw this softball up to you, partner, to get this thing off and running. Your biggest takeaways from week one around the Pac-12 conference?
Boy, I mean, it starts with Utah, right? On the whole, the Pac-12 did pretty well. 9 wins, 3 losses. But the game it had to win for the playoff, it didn't win. That, you know, it was a terrific, terrific game at this swamp. But, you know, Utah needed that. The Pac-12 needed that win. Now Utah's path to the college football playoff is very narrow. They probably have to go undefeated in league play. That's going to be tough. Otherwise, you know, the Pac-12's in very dire straits already in terms of putting together a playoff bid. And that is how your conferences are judged these days. And whether it's fair or not, you put a team in the playoff, you're viewed as being one of the elite leagues. If you don't, you're not. Pac-12 hasn't done it since 2016, and it is going to be really difficult now.
Okay, so let's advance this a little bit, because at the end of last week, it was announced that the CFP is going to expand. We don't know what year exactly it's going to expand, but let's just take the Utah game by example. In this new world that is coming, Utah would not be eliminated. In fact, John, I could make the argument that the way that they ended up losing the game is one of those that, okay, they're on our radar now for the rest of the season. Do you see it the same way, or is it, no, Brad, that's not how this is going to work?
Well, no, I agree. The way that the new format will work is, if you are one of the six, there are 10 conferences in major college football. Mm-hmm. If you are the champion of one of those conferences and are among the top six champions, you're in the playoff. So Utah could lose that game and then lose maybe even two in Pac-12 play. Correct. And still get in, as long as it's one of the six highest ranked conference champions. And of the 10, you know, you got the SEC, you got the Big 10, ACC, Big 12. If they're all ahead of you and you're Utah, the Mountain West champ could still be ahead of you also, and you'd get in because you would be the sixth highest ranked conference champion. So the Pac-12, that the new format has breathed life into the future of the Pac-12, because as long as you win it, if you're one of the top six out of 10, you're getting in.
So the push then would be, you come to our Pac-12 school. Don't pay attention to any of this stuff that is out there. Come here, build something. The new playoff is here. The recruiting class of 2023 would be a part of this in one way, shape, or form, because they'd still be in college. So I could see this already being an advantage. What was the disadvantage, if any, John, that came out of the CFP announcement last week for the Pac-12, in your opinion? Or was there no downside?
Very little downside. There was one proposal on the table, you know, when they were last discussing this last fall and winter, there was one proposal on the table that the champions of the Power Five would have gotten an automatic bid. So the Pac-12 winner would have had an automatic bid. It wouldn't have had to have been one of the top six conference champions, but that's a pretty small difference, right? I mean, if you're Utah or Oregon or Washington and you win the Pac-12, there's like a 99% chance that you're going to get in, because you only, you know, you're going to be ranked ahead of Conference USA. You're going to be ranked ahead of the MAC. You're going to be ranked ahead of the Sun Belt. That leaves the Mountain West and the American, right? So you are really almost guaranteed a bid if you win the Pac-12 in this new format.
Okay, one other question about this, and this is localizing it here to Arizona. The days of ASU playing NAU or U of A opening the season against NAU, are those the regions are going to have to wake up and say, we can't play this game anymore because it's going to hurt us overall in the bigger scheme of things? Or is there still room for one of those cupcakes to open up the season and be nice to your in-state foe?
I think there's still room for a couple reasons, because, you know, almost everybody is going to have a cupcake, right? Whether you're in the SEC or the Big 12 or whatever, you're going to have one cupcake, and it's not going to hurt you in the playoff selection process. The other thing is, the Pac-12 is seriously considering going from 9 conference games to 8 conference games. So they're not going to be able to, there's just not enough teams out there to drop the cupcakes and add a non-conference game. You have to have a cupcake if you're playing 4 non-conference games.
John Wilner with us, Wilner Hotline, for a couple of minutes. None bigger buzz nationally, in my opinion, of, wow, what about this, than the University of Arizona going to San Diego State. I don't know if you saw the game from start to finish, but that was an old-fashioned beatdown, something we haven't seen out of U of A in I don't know how long, John.
Yeah, it was real impressive, right? I mean, you kind of figured they were going to be better this year, because they've got a better quarterback and they have used the transfer portal very well. But I think that that was probably even better than you had a right to expect out of them. We'll see how good San Diego State is. My guess is that they're still pretty good. And it certainly was a message sent that Arizona is hardly a guaranteed win in the Pac-12 after, you know, being a doormat for a few years now. Jed Fish doing a terrific job.
Jacob Cowling comes in as a transfer portal guy. Jaden DeLora was impressive at quarterback. I think of the weekend, and yeah, everybody's all excited about USC. I get it. at what they did with their quarterback to get it off and running. But I think Delora, if you're talking Pac-12 player of the week, he'd have to be in consideration for this.
Well, Cowing, you know, he was just tremendous. Delora, Cowing, both, you know, Washington's quarterback, Michael Penix Jr. had like almost 400 yards passing. There's a bunch of kids, but I would think my guess is it may end up being Cowing. You know, he was just tremendous, and he did something nobody had done in like 15 years, which was catch three touchdown passes in your first Power Five game.
Okay, can't make too much out of week one. Let's see about week two. Arizona State travels to Oklahoma State. This is a game where I look at it and say, you know, the Sun Devils looked okay in stretches. They didn't look good early. It was a 3-0 game at the end of the first quarter. First game, throw it out the window. And then you have U of A hosting Mississippi State, the last game of the night, which I think is going to get underplayed. The two in-state schools this week really are on the radar for me, not just because I'm living here, but it's like, here's the Pac-12. They've got two big out-of-conference games.
They do. It's going to be a lot of fun. You know, I think ASU... that's a tough assignment, right? Oklahoma State's a good team and got a returning quarterback. It's going to be a hostile environment, and we'll see. You know, I'm going to be looking to see how many false start penalties is ASU going to have. You know, how's the discipline going to hold up against a team that pushes back when you push, right? And ASU did a very poor job on the discipline front last year. Has that improved at all under Herm Edwards? If it has, then I think they got a chance to make it a good game in the fourth quarter. If it hasn't, if they got 10, 15 penalties, multiple turnovers, it's going to be, it could end up being a very lopsided. And Arizona, it's going to be fascinating, right? Mike Leach, we know what he wants to do. And, you know, Arizona should be able to hold their own against an SEC team. It's not Alabama, it's not Georgia. This is a winnable game for Arizona, despite what the point spread is.
And the national appeal allure of Stanford USC this week, those are the headline games, right? Anything else catching your eye for this coming week?
No, those are the headline games. You know, I would add Oregon State at Fresno State because, you know, that's a hard game to win. To go on the road against one of the top, you know, do what Arizona just did. Go on the road against a top-tier Mountain West team and win. I just think it could be a good, fun game.
And Washington State at Wisconsin, it's one of those where you're going into the Big Ten. I like that on the surface, or the Cougars, yeah, or something like that. You know, Oregon, one week after a disaster for them, do they throw Bo Nix to the side and say, Ty Thompson, the Valley kid, get out there and play? How quickly do they push the panic button? Really interesting storylines this week.
There are. You know, Washington State, just going to Wisconsin and not getting embarrassed is probably a victory there for the Cougars in the Pac-12. They didn't look very sharp against Idaho, you know, won by a touchdown, weren't great on defense. Wisconsin is going to, you know, do what Wisconsin does, pound the ball, see how Washington State holds up. But that's any game against the Power Five is really important, especially after what happened to Utah and Oregon and also Colorado, which, you know, got run off its own field by TCU. Now they got to turn around and go to Air Force. Mm-hmm. Always hard to play against a triple option.
Yeah, and I think in Colorado's case, you have to start looking closer at what's going to happen there, John, in terms of coaching. That seems like the one spot on the early going. It's, I don't know if they're going to win a game.
Yeah, boy, it did not look good. You know, it'll be interesting. Carl Durrell did well in his first season, which was the COVID year. Then they struggled last year. So this is kind of the, all right, what's your identity here season for them? And, you know, if they're 3-9, 2-10 after going 4-8 last year, they're going to probably have a decision to make.
John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. Find all of his content over at sports360az.com. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter. See you next week. Thanks.
Thanks.
It is week one. That means it is time for the Hall of Famer. That means it's time to get serious with Michael Fabiano, senior fantasy analyst with Sports Illustrated SI.com and Sirius XM, where you can hear his content. Off we go. The mailbag is full. For some reason, it's a bunch of cowboy questions. I'll try to lob through these.
This is going
to
be like my favorite mailbag ever.
I know. All right. The player that you're looking at saying, this dude is going to crush it. I know there's a lot of players, but the guy that you're so in love with, you can't talk yourself off the ledge that you're thinking, nobody else is really in love with this guy like I am. Who is guy?
I mean, I don't know if nobody else is in love with this guy like I am, but, and again, yeah, I'm a Cowboys fan, but I'm not looking through it in terms of like just the Cowboys. CeeDee Lamb is in a ridiculously great spot to succeed. He's going in the high second rounds. There's no Amari Cooper. Michael Gallup is going to be out for the first few weeks, right? And they didn't put him on the PUP list, so he should be back before week four. But still, Amari Cooper and that target share that he had last year is gone. So CeeDee Lamb is the number one guy in Dallas. And I recently talked to Dez Bryant, who also wore number 88, by the way.
Mm.
And Dez, he drafted him. Dez did my celebrity fantasy football league this year. It's his first year playing fantasy football. He had a pick at the end of the first round. He drafted CeeDee Lamb. And he told me, this is his year. This is the year that he goes off, that he begins another player wearing number 88 who's going to do great things. And I've been on CD all offseason. A lot of people have. All right. So I love Trey Lance, too. I think he's going to be this year's Jalen Hurts. Right. Last year, my breakout quarterback was Jalen Hurts, and he ended up breaking out. This year, it's Trey Lance. Is Garoppolo being there throwing a little bit of cold water on him? To be honest with you, I don't think so. The Niners invested a lot to get this kid. And Garoppolo had gotten them to a Super Bowl, may have gotten them to another Super Bowl if Tart didn't drop that interception, potentially, in the playoffs against the Rams. He is now their number two. They have moved on. And Trey Lance would have to play terribly to lose that job. Terribly.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the mobility. Look at this history of quarterbacks who have rushed for like 500-plus yards in a single season. Normally, that's going to get you three or four touchdowns as well as a rusher. Those quarterbacks are on the top 15. And I think Trey Lance is going to rush for over 500 yards this year. Could be much more than that. Now, does that hurt Debo? Yes, I will tell you this as I go off on a little bit of a tangent here.
Yes, I like tangents.
I'm in high-stakes leagues with the best of the best. And Debo's sliding a little bit. He's falling into the third round. Remember, like after last year, Brad, everyone was like, oh man, this guy's a first round pick, late first round pick. He slid into the second, and now he's sliding into the third. I think the reason why is that you got a mobile quarterback. Garoppolo is not a mobile quarterback. And that means that there's going to be more design plays as a runner for Trey Lance. The Niners backfield is healthy right now with Mitchell and Wilson and Ty Davis and Ty Davis Price, and you've also got a quarterback who's not going to be a statue back there. And Garoppolo, you would think at this point in his career, is probably a better passer than Trey Lance, because Trey Lance is very, he's wet behind the ears. So Debo's 8 rushing touchdowns, not going to happen. I don't know that he's getting over 300 rushing yards. And the 1,400 yards through the air, probably not going to happen either. And between you and I and everyone listening, Brandon Ayuk has looked awesome.
Yeah.
He looked awesome in camp. Awesome. So just keep that in mind. I'm not saying you don't draft Debo. Maybe you wait until the third round to do it.
Okay. So you've answered a bunch of mailbag questions.
This is what happens, man. It's like week one, and I'm like, I'm sitting right in here. So I'm kind of feeling what you got on those papers and through Twitter, and I'm hitting it up before you even ask me.
I mean, the Cowboys without Gallup, I'm getting all these questions about ask Fabs about what are they going to do here, and you just go right to CD. But, walk through the rest of what you see in Dallas, because the expectation of Zeke. Ask Fabs about the expectation of Zeke. So I got a couple Cowboy questions right off the top.
Remember that Zeke in the first half of last year was putting up pretty good numbers, right? And then he had the knee injury, and he was slow. He was running in quicksand. And then Pollard looked great, and everyone says, Zeke's done. Zeke's not done. I think he's got another good year in him. And you're only drafting him as an RB2. He's not getting picked as an RB1. You're telling me I can get Zeke as an RB2 in the third or fourth round? Sign me the hell up. And I'm not just saying that because I love the Cowboys. Tony Pollard, there is enough work in that offense for both of those guys to be on the field at the same time and produce. Pollard's going to get lined up in the slot. They're going to use him as a receiver. And that's huge in PPR leagues, because right now you got CD. Behind him, you got Jalen Tolbert, who is certainly draftable late, but he's a rookie. I mean, you got Noah Brown. James Washington's hurt. And, of course, Gallup's not playing. There's going to be a lot of targets for Dalton Schultz. Dalton Schultz is going high in drafts. Not like K Kittle or Waller or, you know, the elite guys, certainly not Pitts, Kelsey, or Andrews territory, but he's going right after those top five guys. And I think after last year, when he was a top five tight end, people are expecting him to do something similar this year. And certainly without Gallup, he'll get more targets. But Tony Pollard is a guy I really like in Dallas that's not a CD or a Zeke. Like, you know, these guys are established. Pollard's going to get burned. He's a super playmaker. We know he's a playmaker. And it's all about Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy getting creative and getting the ball in his hands. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to take a massive amount of touches away from Zeke. It doesn't. Pollard is going to be a guy that if you draft him as a flex, you'll be very happy. I think he could bring back high flex, maybe low RB2 numbers in a best case scenario.
All right, stick with the mailbag. Michael Fabiano, SI Fantasy Hall of Famer, with us for a few minutes. You can hear him, of course, on SiriusXM. It's week one. He's fired up. He's got the fire coming out of his eyes on this one. Trey Lance or Jalen Hurts this week?
Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts playing the Lions. He's in my top five this week, that quarterback. I have him ranked ahead of Patrick Mahomes right now. I have friends in the industry who have Jalen Hurts in the top three quarterback. Yeah. So Hurts this week, and Hurts in most weeks, I think. You'll play the matchups. If Lance is playing a bad defense, then yeah, but Hurts is probably your quarterback in most weeks.
I have Mahomes and I have Kyler Murray. Who am I playing this Sunday?
Why? Why? Why do people have both those guys like on the same team? Like, you're playing Mahomes, but why? Make a trade. Like,
I'm going to make a trade.
Oh, wait, this is you? Yeah. You have Mahomes and Murray?
I was in a league where I just said, I'm looking at the long play. I'm looking at the long play. Hopkins isn't going to be here. No Nuke, right?
No, but Brad, you're going to play Mahomes every week. Trade Murray. Or if it's going to make your listeners upset, then trade Mahomes.
but Mahomes doesn't have Tyreek.
I get it.
Different offense early. It wasn't my strategy.
He's still trust me. Yeah. What round did you get both of those quarterbacks? I'm interested to know. Do you remember?
I had the turn.
So you ended up getting them back to back.
I did.
Okay. Trade one.
You're gonna say why? I know I'm going to. I've got everybody and their brother coming after me.
You should. And I'm just gonna. As well, they should.
I'm gonna do this for about. I don't know. But I'm in four different leagues. This is a league I've been in for 30 plus years. And I wanted to have some fun this year. I wanted to just shake things up. It's one of these things. We're going to be fine. It's a long ass season.
My concern for you is that drafting those two guys back to back, probably as early as you had to do it, caused your running backs or wide receivers to suffer. And if it didn't, then kudos to you. But make it known in your league, which you probably already have, that both of these guys are on the trade block at all times, and anybody who wants to make an offer, send it your way.
I like getting ridiculed on draft night. There's four drafts. You can have some fun with this. This is not brain surgery. Well, it is brain surgery, and sometimes you miss on it. All right, Cortland Sutton or Jerry Jeudy in Denver?
This week I'm going Sutton. Sutton and Wilson have gained a rapport. Not that he hasn't with Jeudy, but we've heard more reports about that. Sutton's more of the home run hitter type of guy, and we're going to see how it pans out. But if you compare what he had in Seattle, Cortland would be more of like the DK, where Jeudy would be more of the Tyler Lockett. And by the way, what a bummer about the Seahawks and starting Geno Smith. That's another story altogether. But I'd go Sutton right now. I have Sutton ranked higher. Unless we start to see Jerry Jeudy get a ton of targets in the first few weeks, which is possible, I'm going to have Sutton ranked ahead of him in most weeks at wide receiver. And how about week one, Russell back in Seattle against the Seahawks? You want to talk about a revenge game? That's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Russell's going to be in a lot of lineups this week.
Yeah, a lot of Denver fans coming out of the woodwork on that. Last question for the mailbag. What's Fabs think Drake London is the next Jamar Chase?
No, not this year. I don't think there is a Jamar Chase in the class this year. I really don't. There's a lot of good wide receivers. I don't see there being an elite wide receiver. And honestly, not with Marcus Mariota throwing the ball either. I think Drake London could be, in a best-case scenario, like a low two, right? Mm-hmm. So he'd be, you know, wide receiver 23, 24 in a best-case scenario. Now, he's back at practice. He had been dealing with a little bit of a knee. Got a bad matchup against the Saints in week one. And what did Jamar Justin Jefferson and CD over the last, like, you know, 2-3 years all have in common during their rookie seasons. They had good quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Dak Prescott's a good quarterback. And then, of course, when he got hurt and it was Ben DiNucci, then everything went to hell. But Justin Jefferson's got Kirk Cousins. You can make fun of Kirk Cousins all you want. He's a good quarterback. Ja'Marr Chase had his college pal, Joe Burrow, really good quarterback. So I don't know that you're going to get the same sort of production from Drake London with Marcus Mariota or maybe even Desmond Ridder at some point under center for Atlanta. I would draft Drake London as a low 3 or a high 4, hoping that he could be a low 2 in a best case scenario.
Okay, one other question just came in. Fabs on Julio Jones.
Late round flyer. The dude's always hurt. Like, is it good that he's got Tom Brady throwing the ball? Yeah. I mean, as long as the whole thing with Giselle doesn't blow up, but I mean, that's another story. That's like a page 6 story. But you've got Evans, you've got Godwin, who already shed the brace coming off the ACL. You've got Gage, and you've got Julio in the mix there too. Of course, you know, tight end, you lose Gronkowski, you're looking at Brayton Rudolph. But for me, I don't think Julio Jones is going to be anything more than maybe the third best option at best. He's certainly not going to usurp Evans and Godwin. And he's an older wide receiver who can't stay healthy. You think all of a sudden the guy's found the fountain of youth and he's going to play 17 games? Probably not. So late round flyer. That's where I would go with Julio Jones. And I wouldn't even think about doing anything more than that.
All right. His starts and sits are on SI.com. You can see right. His content there every week.
It also player rankings. Yep.
Player rankings, all that stuff. Do you have a couple of starts and sits that you would care to share, or are you going to force everybody to go over and read?
I'll give you a few.
All right.
Quarterbacks. I told you about Trey Lance. I like Trey Lance. I like Aaron Rodgers this week too. He typically does pretty well against Minnesota on their home field. Running back Rashad Penny is going to get all the burn. Maybe game script is going to be a problem. Yeah, but he's still a flex starter without question for me. And Chase Edmonds is a flex guy. I'm not going to give you guys the obvious players, by the way, all right? Because if you're not smart enough to start the obvious players, then you may want to take up, I don't know, cricket
or something. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm
right,
here.
Exactly, right? So, you know, those two guys, if we're looking at volume, Michael Pittman Jr., I really like. This could be like the only week I can put him in stardom, sit him, because he's going to be too obvious at some point. But good matchup against the Texans. I like him. I also think that this is a good week to start Cortland Sutton, because I do like Russell Wilson. And so I would think, well, his number one receiver, Adam Thielen, also a good play. He typically does pretty well against Green Bay. And the over-under in that game is over 50. So I think he's in a good spot as a wide receiver, 2 or 3 or flex. Tight ends. Like, honestly, tight end is so thin, you better start the guys that you drafted to start. Right. But outside of that group, I like Dawson Knox as a red zone guy because, you know, they cut O.J. Howard. That's Thursday night. I like Freiermuth. He had 2 touchdowns against the Bengals last year. Cole Kmet, I don't love the matchup, but Justin Fields likes throwing those tight ends. He did it a lot last year, and now Jimmy Graham is gone. So Kmet, I think, will be a more targeted player in the red zone there for Fields if the Bears can ever get into the red zone. So Kmet's another guy I like too.
He is the Hall of Famer for another year, and you can hear him on Sirius XM. It's worth the price of subscription. I hear it. I drive around. I yell or laugh, and I'm listening to him.
Mostly laugh.
Yeah, mostly laugh. I don't yell much at all. He is Michael Fabiano. Good talking to you. We'll see you next week.
Take care, pal.
And we're back with more after this timeout.